Tony, of those farmers, of say those farmers who increased from 15 to 40, or is it an extra 40? Is it going to be a total of 40?
The number's not confirmed yet. We've had two new farmers come on board in the last week. Yeah, so it's growing. Yeah.
It doesn't matter because what I want to tease apart is this, that off those extra farmers that have come on board, how many of those would you guess or have you tested have got mycorrhiza fungi in their soils now?
Yep. We haven't done any tests on the new farmers coming on board from a soil food web test yet. We probably will start that process in the next few weeks, I would suggest, because we want to get a benchmark at the start of where they're at. Then if we can do that, then in maybe a couple of years' time, we can see some progress. And that's what we have to demonstrate that to the farmers, that we're making progress in some areas. And if not, why not? And then we can use the soil food web to work through it. Is there a toxin in the soil that's inhibiting that from happening? We need to understand why it's not happening. So, yeah, we do need to start that process now. Yep. It's all part of
Tony,
the management tools that are out there.
Sorry. Tony, you did mention 150 tests that you did through the Soil Food Web laboratory that none had mycorrhiza fungi. Of those 150 tests, I'm just out of a guess, how many farms would have that covered?
Over the about 13 or 14, or probably about 13 years, that's probably covered. It probably covers 50 farms or something like that. A lot of farmers will do two or three tests. So it's a rough estimate. It's not a precise number. I'd have to do some homework on to get the exact numbers. But yeah, you're probably looking at 40 or 50 farmers over that time.
Yep. They have no mycorrhiza fungi, so they've got no link in the soil between, or the link between the plant or the atmospheric gases is minimal in comparison with a farm which has got mycorrhiza fungi. Would you say that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Right.
They're a lot more reliant on the fertilisers they put on in a water-soluble form because they don't have the same capacity to release nutrients. So it's the more on approach. They've got to keep putting more on to take up nutrients. They can't access them.
Right. Tony, is there a bit of a mindset change amongst the farmers to appreciate to what you're doing in terms of working with the soil biology or using your program or however you want to describe it? Is there sort of a mindset change on that?
Oh, absolutely. Some of these farmers initially started with us from a waste management point of view, you know, and some still are. We've got a waste problem, and then we start to say, well, okay, well, there's two ways of doing this. We can just throw the stuff out, and we've solved your waste problem, but there's actually an opportunity here to do things a bit different. And so it does take time for them to come around to that thinking. Whereas other farmers are coming from having been educated or informed about biological farming from other people. So it varies a little bit where the farmers are coming from, but what we're finding is if you get results, they come, yeah.
Tony, we'll have to keep talking because either our equipment here is such that we can't access farmers who are online, and if farmers are online, I'd apologise that because we just can't seem to access them, and we do know there's always farmers online. So we'll just keep talking, and if a farmer does come online, we just please, the line is open, so just blurt out your question, I should say, state your question. Tony, you did mention Elaine Ingham. So can you, we have met you at Elaine Ingham's course. What is the relevance there between Elaine Ingham and what you're doing, or is there any relevance?
Absolutely. We have worked closely with Elaine. We've had her down here a few times. We've put on seminars with her in the past. She's got a track record which I think, if followed as close as possible to what she's recommending, actually does work, and it's working around the world in different soil types and climates. We're pretty much working to those lines. Probably the only thing we're doing a little bit different in the program that we're promoting excuse me, is we are still using a liquid nitrogen. Anyway, recommends probably a protozoal spray. My voice is going here. But we're probably not there yet. We're getting some good changes happening, nutrient cycling happening. We're finding that the nitrogen requirements are dropping, but we're probably not there to the point where the protozoal spray is doing enough in a dead of winter on a dairy farm milking, you know, 2 to 3 cows to the hectare. So we're still seeing a place for some liquid nitrogen at this point in time. But apart from that, we're trying to keep pretty close to an SFI approach. We've really found that the game changer was moving up in our volumes of compost to the hectare, and that's been a real game changer. We used to go in at lower rates and do some follow-up teas to compensate for the fact that we're putting out compost at lower rates. And that was okay. We're getting some results. But once we started up in the ante to 3 or 4 tonnes of the hectare, there were some significant changes happening, and I think that's been a game changer for farmers. Yep.
Tony, I have got a question here which has been typed into our system, and it's from, so I'll read it out to you. It's from Rick Preston, who's from Geelong, and Geelong is sort of about half an hour's drive due west of Yass in New South Wales. The question reads like this, and I'll read it out to you. Tony, thank you for explaining the relationship between the plants and mycorrhizal fungi so well. Unfortunately, a soil food web soil analysis has indicated zero, that's on his own property, of mycorrhiza colonisation in one of my paddocks. How do I introduce this fungi in the most economical way? I've been quoted $130 a tonne for local compost here, plus cartage, plus spreading, which I feel is far too expensive. We're running a Merino and Angus cattle breeding operation here. So can you sort of answer that question? He's got $130 a tonne plus cartage spreading. What's his options?
Yeah, I think compost is probably too an expensive operation for sheep, being a low import system. The dairy farmers have got a much higher return per hectare. To go with that is to look at compost teas and worm juices. I think we've got to go back to understanding what's compromising the ability for the fungi to get in there. So it could be some other chemicals that are being used that it's not there. And we've got to put out fungal foods and inoculums. So although there's no mycorrhizal fungi in worm juices and compost teas as such, there's potential to feed fungal biomass. If we can lift fungal biomass, we'll create an environment where mycorrhizal fungi can move back into that environment. It won't move back in and grow if the environment isn't to its liking. So you can buy spores, but I probably would not do that until you can lift your fungal biomass. If your fungal biomass is up high enough, then maybe spores is an option. It's important to feed the fungal biomass to keep that food web working for you. And so that's where your worm juices and your compost teas have foods. There are some other fungal foods that you can use, which is where compost is good because it has to give you an example what fungal foods are, fungal foods are your more complicated carbon chains. So a bacterial food is a simple carbon chain that the bacteria can consume very quickly, and they breed very quickly. But those that they can't consume are usually fungal foods. So the fungal foods that most farmers are working with are things like humates, which is a derivative from coal, which is a complicated carbon chain. You're looking at the oil in the fish, so that's a complicated carbon chain. That's a fungal food. The actual fish emulsion itself is a bacterial food. Compost and compost teas, worm juices and worm castings all have fungal food components in them, so they're very good as well. Humic and fulvic acids tend to be fungal foods because they've got complicated carbon chains in them. They're used for other reasons but as well, but they're the sorts of things that are good for growing fungi. So lift your fungal biomass, and by default we'd like to think that mycorrhizal will move back in when it's ready. On the Whiting's farm and the Davis's farm were the two field days where it took 2 years for it to move back in, and we haven't necessarily got it to where we want it to be. So it does take a bit of time. I think that's the best way of answering, but certainly you can buy spores and mix them up in water and spray them out as well.
Tony, thank you for that lengthy explanation. I appreciate you could have gone longer on explaining that because it's quite a detailed subject. So, thank you very much for that explanation of how to get fungi or mycorrhizal fungi in the soil. Tony, you did mention just Davis's farm. That was another farm that was organised by the DPI or the Farm Dairy Ready system. Is there anything there that would like to talk about that's relevant to this conversation with you and this CD that's going to be available to farmers?
Yeah, certainly Craig and Jeff Davis, father and son, run a 650 cow dairy farm between Campion and Cobden in Western Victoria. They have about 200 acres of centipivot irrigation. The rest of it's dryland farming. They've been working with us for about 3 years, and the irrigation and some of the dryland is a sandy loam or maybe a loam, so it's a different soil type to the Whitings, and then they have a percentage of it which is heavy clay flats. So they've got different soil types again, and probably the clay flats, as I said before, are a bit slower moving, but the beauty of making your own compost is that you've got the opportunity to vary the rates that you put out. And they went out and put the compost on their clay flats at between 5 and 10 tonnes to the acre. So they did some trial work because they had about 400 to the acre. Yeah, so they went out at really high rates just to see what it would do. So they've got some flexibility in the system if you make your own compost on how you can use it. Now, I know that doesn't help a grazing property, but certainly on a dairy farm that there's some opportunities to be flexible with your rates if you've got a fair bit up your sleeve to play with. Certainly, it made a difference. We need to qualify that a bit more, which we haven't done yet, but we need to qualify the differences. But certainly, from the Davis's point of view, it's been a game changer. We're starting to do what are called VSAs for anyone who wants to Google it, visual soil assessments. They were developed in New Zealand by a scientist there, I think with the DPI division in New Zealand. And it's basically a gumboot approach of looking at the soil and its structure, etc. And it's a booklet you can download as a PDF file, or you can buy them as a printed form. It's been around for about 10 years in New Zealand, and they've just made their way to the mainland Australia. And we're using that as another tool for managing soil life, not so much from a microscopic point of view, but from soil texture and structure, looking at root depth, and it gives them a rating. And so what you can do, you can benchmark your soil at the start, no different to an SFI test or a chemical test, and you can look at all these things like pooling of water on the surface, species, root depth and worm numbers, etc., and the types of how the soil breaks up. There's a shatter test that you do depending on what your soil structure is, and you can determine that by different tests that you can do within this VSA. And the farmer can do it, and or someone else can do it, and the results should come back the same. And it gives a rating out of 52. And then next year you can test your soil again and see whether you've improved it or not from a soil structure point of view, etc. It's a really good test. Been in New Zealand for about 10 years. It's been scrutinised by other scientists, and they've come back and agreed that it's a really good way of determining soil health. So we're using those as well to measure soil health. Certainly Google it, VSA or visual soil assessment. It's a good tool to consider.
Thank you very much. That's good. Anything else you'd like to talk about the Whiting's property or your own operation?
I think I know this has been targeted more at the dairy farmer, and I think that on a dairy farm there's a really, really good opportunity to incorporate the waste management system into the fertiliser system. On the average dairy farm where there's maybe a feed pad or a calving pad, and you're looking at around about 2 tonne of finished compost to the cow, to give you a ballpark figure. If it's a fairly intensive setup, then it's possibly more than that. We tend to bulk it out with sawdust and wood chip, which gets lots of carbon and airspace and structure in there, which is really good for the composting process. So you can actually bulk it out to around 3 tonnes to the cow if you want to, if the desire is there. So I just think it's a terrific opportunity to incorporate one and reduce the other and grow more grass. And although that hasn't been our emphasis to grow more grass, at 3 tonnes of the hectare, that seems to be what's happening.
Tony, you did mention that you've been emphasised on dairy, or this conversation has been with you and me, but I do know that you have, well, in the earlier days, that your consultants had sold your products to conventional farmers, to sheep and cattle farmers who are not dairying. Yep. So can you give a very brief rundown of what has been the interest and what's some of the results and the sheep and cattle farms?
Certainly. We've got a good example of a farm not far from here. It's a 600 cow beef farm, been with us for about 4 years, and they've got one test we did last year, because they started off with zero mycorrhizal as well 3 years ago, they've got one test up to 56% colonisation, which is actually the best one we've ever seen. So, and that's a program that's tailored for a low input system, and on that farm what we did, we put compost out on a third of the farm over 3 years, so we covered the whole farm with compost, but it took 3 years to do, and that was at lower rates, at somewhere around half a tonne to the hectare. And then we've mainly worked
very
with
low, isn't it?
It is very low, and you really only it's not enough to make a significant difference. So to compensate, you've got to look at using some compost teas and or worm juices. We actually make a blend of the two, and do some follow-up work with that. So that, to us, compensates for the fact that they haven't gone out at high enough rates to make a difference in itself. The beauty of doing it with the compost is that in their case, in a lot of cases on grazing properties, they haven't got the inputs coming in to put the P and the K back in the soil, like on a dairy farm where they're buying in hay and silage and grain. Whereas on a grazing property, the tendency is you're selling off your nutrients. So the beauty of going over a third of the farm each year was that was their opportunity to put some phosphorus or potassium into that portion of the farm. So it was a medium for doing that. It's also putting out foods as well as a bit more diversity in organisms. Probably the one drawback from putting out a tea or a worm juice compared to a compost is that you're not getting the nematodes out there that you're chasing. In a tea or worm juice, you're only putting out small amounts of actual physical compost, which is being put in water and bubbled. And yes, you'll breed up bacteria and fungi, but you're not breeding up nematodes in that time frame, so you're missing out on those. Whereas if you're putting out compost, even at half a tonne to the hectare, you're putting out, you know, thousands and thousands of nematodes more than what you would in a tea. So there's still some merit in using compost where possible for nematode numbers, but most of the other things you can do with a tea. You can put out foods, you can still get an inoculum of bacteria and fungi out there. So teas can be a really good and a much cheaper option for a grazing farmer. And yes, we're getting some results in grazing and cropping, but it hasn't been a focus area for us. We've been mainly working in the dairy side.
Yeah, busy enough there. Tony, I've got another question that's come in later. It's from George White from Manangatang, and I will read it out to you. I have just joined in. Has there been any discussion about worm farm vermicomposting and mycorrhizal fungi numbers compared to other composting methods with regards to, and he's got AATs, I'm not too sure what AATs means. Can you sort of decipher that question and give it a try to answer it?
Okay, I'll do my best. A good worm cast and a good compost both do the same thing. So worm casting is a really, really good product, and so is a good compost. And I think getting mycorrhizal fungi back in, it's a combination of cutting out a lot of the water-soluble fertilisers and then lifting fungal biomass, and by default, mycorrhizal should follow in due course. If it doesn't, and give it a couple of years, it's not something that will happen overnight. Our experience is it takes 2 years, and that's been on three farms that we've monitored very closely. It takes 2 years to get it back in, and then even then the amount of colonisation will vary. So just be aware of that. Maybe we could have speeded up the process if we had introduced some mycorrhizal spores, which you can buy. I know New Edge Microbes in Albury sell them. There may be other suppliers as well. So absolutely, that to me is the approach. So whether it's a worm cast or whether it's a compost, as long as it's been made in an aerobic way, both should do the same job.
Tony, I think we'll wind up the call here, and I'd like to thank all the farmers who have sent in their questions, farmers who have been online, and also thank the farmers who are in the Farming Secrets Club, and when they're on their tractors or utes and listening to the CD, I'm sure they'll appreciate it. So I'd like to thank you, Tony, for the tremendous work you're doing in your area. So would you like to sort of wrap up what you do? Well, wrap up a bit about Campanella compost, or how would you like to wrap it up? I'll leave the ball in your court, Tony.
Well, first of all, thank you, Hugo, for the opportunity to talk. Yourself and Helen have been very cooperative and understanding, and coming to the field days and sharing the word has been really important to us, because there is a lot of inquiry for this. We are getting inquiry from other areas, which we are going to struggle to be able to service other areas. But by putting it in this form, it does help farmers to do that. And I think that's what I'm passionate about, is just helping farmers be able to reduce their input costs and utilise a resource that they have anyway. So I suppose the message is to try and use what they've got before they start buying in nutrients. And most of the farmers are buying enough nutrients in. They're buying their P and K in their grain and hay and silage. Yes, the outpaddocks might need addressing, and that has to be something that has to be considered. But in many cases, they're bringing in enough nutrients, or it's tied up. They've got enough tied up. We are still finding some nutrient going into the compost, and that's determined by soil tests. So if they can understand their do some nutrient mapping, and the Dairy Extension Centre has some information on it. That's a DPI website. They can start to follow through on that. If they like, they can certainly send emails to us, and we're happy to respond.
Tony, that's very, very generous, and also I appreciate your explanation that although we've been talking about dairying a lot, that this system actually applies to other farmers, irrespective of whether they're cropping or sheep, et cetera. So I'd really like to thank you for your input. So on that note, I'll say goodbye and leave it to you, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you, Hugo. Yeah, goodbye.
Thank you very much, Tony. All the best. Bye.
Bye.
And I'd like to say goodbye to all the farmers on the line as well. Thank you very much.